Testing. You're probably first wondering, where is Vancouver Island University? Of course, in the name, it is kind of given. It's a very small place. It's on Vancouver Island. It's a big island, though. It's Vancouver. And small, you just ask, how small is it? 25% of the faculty are here right now from physics. So quite small. I wasn't quite sure what level to put the talk at when Andre invited me. First of all, I tried to convince him that he probably made a mistake. Wasn't quite sure where I fitted in, but he was very persistent. And so I wasn't sure. I said, well, there's science, there's math guys there, there's people in the arts. So I kind of went to try to go in between. I don't know if that's good or bad, but we'll see. I'll talk about how I got into the physics of sports. Probably it was like around 2000, I was on a curling team. And teachers and professors on Friday afternoon would curl. And one member of one of the other teams came up to me and said, oh, he says, where do you work? I said, well, I work at the university. What do you teach? Physics. I said, oh, great. why do curling rocks curl? So, I don't know. I'll get back to you. Next week I'll get back to you and I'll tell you why. It can't be that much of a problem. How many here have curled? Anyone here? No one's curled. Little hand goes up. Have you seen curling? You've seen curling?
Scottish game.
Canadian game. Canadian game. Basically, it's quite a heavy disc-shaped granite rock. It's quite heavy. It's quite surprising when you first start. It's not something light. You have to swing it back and go. The biggest problem when you're starting, she looks very elegant there, is not falling over. That's a toughie. And so you're focused on that. But it's a fun game, and it's it doesn't take that long to be able to play somewhat decently. And the whole idea is to slide it down the ice, and at the other end there's rings, and you can knock the other person's rocks out. The idea, the closer you get your rock to the center, at the end counts for more points. So it's a very simple game. One thing is you turn it, you curl it. And either you have an in-turn or out-turn, depending which way you want it to curl. And the person up front, the skip, hold the broom in the place, you aim at the broom, you do the turn, and it goes in where the skip wants it to go. Sweeping is an important part. And you sweep hard. If you ever watch curling on TV, you go hard, hard, yelling at. So you sweep very hard. The point is to reduce the friction. And the rock goes significantly further by sweeping. Typically, it says undergoes 2 to 3 rotations. It depends. If you look online and you look at books, how to curl, some will say do 1 or 2 rotations. Some will say do 2 or 3, 3 or 4. So it's quite flexible. And a particular curler really curls the same way every time. It's not that they adjust how many spins they give it. And it deflects significantly, around 1 meter to this side. So it's not, and sometimes a bit more. So it's quite significant, and if you ever watch it, how precise they can be, so they want to get it right about around the one rock and land in the rings. So before I looked at that, so when he asked me that, okay, tell me something a little easier. A disc. No, sorry, a cylinder. So we're talking about this. A cylinder. If I push a cylinder on the table and I give it a little twist, I find it deflects. Not a lot. And it deflects in that direction. So first of all, I wanted to understand that. It's fairly straightforward. The frictional force, the net frictional force, gives it a torque towards the front. The normal force is greater on the front than at the back. Then when you look around the rim and look at the frictional force, you can see that there is a resulting frictional force, and you're getting a net force to the right there. And so what I did was very simple. Video camera over the disc, slipped on tables, played around, different spins, different speeds, and compared it to theoretically working out how much it should deflect, how it should travel. Wasn't anything that sophisticated. This is one case. I don't know if those are two different velocities, probably. Worked out quite well. So I knew how this worked. Quite straightforward. Knew how much it would curl. Would depend on the spin, proportion to the spin. But then the question is, what about a curling rock? Well, a curling rock, even though it looks like it's flat on the bottom, it isn't. It has a ring. That's the only part that makes contact with the ice, is a ring. And it's, like I say, 5 millimeters, half a centimeter wide. It also is slightly rough. The stone is polished except for that ring. As you'll see, it turned out to be important. If I put in, do the same calculation I did with the cylinder, I get it deflects 8 millimeters. A little bit off. Slightly bigger problem. Goes the other way. So, not quite the same as this. Yet this is still important to keep this in mind, why this curls. So when he was first asked the question, the very first thing I did was I went home and I said, who's written on why curling rock curls? There was three papers I found. There wasn't that many, just three. Three different researchers that had done this. One of them, I hope he's not here, was very bizarre. Had to do with solving a problem in the reference frame of the curling rock and then transforming back to the inertial frame, and that what gave you the curl. I don't think Newton would have been very happy with that one. So I knew that was wrong. I didn't understand, you know, how it got published. The other two dealt with the idea that the frictional force at the back must be greater than at the front, opposite to what this was. Remember, this was higher frictional force in the front than the back is the normal force. So therefore, if it's curling the other way, it just makes logical sense that it must be that the frictional force is greater at the back than in the front. Then it would curl the right way. First of all, when I read all three papers, the first thing that popped in my head, none of these three people have ever curled. It was pretty obvious they hadn't curled. Chulesky, Canadian, actually had several publications. His basic idea had to do with, the first one specifically, was where there's dry friction at the front and there's wet friction at the back. And their wet friction was greater than the dry friction. Now, first of all, the fact you sweep the rock in the front would to reduce the friction, I would actually argue the opposite. I would think that the front running band would raise the temperature of the ice slightly, and the friction at the back would be less. But anyway, I figured, well, what was the best way to do this? Well, I'll do experiments. None of these guys had any experimental results. Zero. No experimental evidence provided in any of them. Calculation, the friction at the back to cause the amount of curl had to be much, much larger than at the front to get that amount of curl for that rock. And the amount of curl would be proportional to the angular frequency, the angular velocity of the rock. So first thing I did was I went to the curling rink and collected data. I wasn't good enough to control it, but I got the best curler that was there. Said, okay, would you help me? And he would throw rocks down the center line, and I basically would just measure the deflection. Under certain conditions, I had to get within the rings. And those are the data points. These were really hard. People said, why didn't you get more? to get to throw the rock with only a little bit of a spin and get it going down the ice and not stopping was very, very difficult. I mean, dozens and dozens of throws. It always would start curling and never stop and slide. You had to have at least, you know, close to one rotation for it to go all the way still rotating. And it would stop rotating and sliding at the same time. You can see that the seem to be a peak here. There's a lot of scatter in it. It's not just because of experimental. The rocks, I later on found a paper from 1930. It was a paper, Royal Canadian Physical Society. I don't know what university they were from. And they collected lots of data on curling rocks, the path that they took. In fact, their data was way better than any data that I collected or anybody collected on curling rocks since. They didn't really give an explanation, per se, but they got similar result. And Ian Chileski later on actually went to the curling rink and found similar results. So the interesting thing is, it's almost constant. It doesn't matter you rotate it once, twice, three times, or four times. The amount of deflection is independent of the angular velocity. It's very strange. It doesn't make any sense. The phenomena that's causing the curling rock to deflect has no impact on it.
Are these all the same rock?
These would be different rocks. But don't look at that as being the variation there. It's even the same rock throwing down there, it's not that consistent. Even sometimes when you throw it, sometimes at the end, sometimes it almost seems to, I'll talk about a little bit later, seems to almost catch something, adhere, and swing around. And you got this type of behavior. But the key is even up to 7, and it's difficult to throw a rock, it's not natural to throw a rock with that many rotations when you're doing it. So it goes 7 rotations on the ice. So it's an awkward motion, right? So we did lots of rock, but it was fairly consistent, and it matched with what curlers would say. Curlers would say, oh, if you throw it too much spin, it doesn't curl as much. Probably the effect is not as large as they thought, because it does decrease, but not that significantly. Now, so I said, okay, if the curling at the back has to be so much greater than at the front, what's a good way of testing it? So it's a half rock and a full rock. If I have a half curling rock and I drag it versus a regular curling rock and drag it, I would suspect if the front band is doing anything to the ice to affect the friction, I should notice the effect and the difference. Yes?
It's a half rock.
A half rock. A half rock is a half rock. So it's a half rock. I fabricated, I didn't cut it. No, I should have. I should have got a curling rock and I should have cut it. I fabricated, what I did was made a model. I used acrylic and with weights to get the right weight. And I roughened the band. I compared that with a regular rock to make sure they had the same behavior. So and then I did a model of that. And I dragged, it was a very simple measurement. And what I found, I was surprised, what I wanted to do, my goal was to find this difference between the friction at the front and the back, so then I can actually model what the actual path was, which the other guys hadn't done. So that's what my goal was, but what I found was two things. I found no difference. There was no difference dragging half or full. And they were exactly the same as a regular curling rock. And their behavior was exactly the same, theoretically, as other sliders on ice. There was nothing unique about a curling rock sliding on the ice. Theoretically, it behaved like any of the people that had done other measurements of objects sliding on ice. Same theory applied, that's the line I got there. The dependence on the velocity, one over V, exactly the same. So this is a problem. Why does a curling rock curl? So I was disappointed because obviously that can't be it. This front-back asymmetry cannot be responsible for the curl of the curling rock. And there was a Swedish group more recently has come out, and they came up with exactly the same conclusions, basically. They looked at what the difference would have to be between front and back to get it to curl. It's just not there.
So that black line, so that's a theory that says
yes.
U goes like 1 over square root of V? Is that?
Yes. And there's more than that. The actual slope is theoretical in terms of the heat transfer to the ice. Okay? So it's the same as for any other slider on ice. The behavior is exactly the same as any other slider on ice. The fact that it's a band is not, and it's exactly the same behavior. And when you see the curling rock go down the ice, you don't see it wet behind it. You definitely don't see anything like that. And you throw the curling rock in a game, you play, let's say 10 ends, and you got 16, 160 rocks, well, I guess one way, 80 rocks going down the same path. It's not that you're getting the ice deteriorating and you have to stop every once in a while and get the ice ready, no. And you can play several games. So hundreds and hundreds of rocks sliding down the same path.
It's basically friction melting. This is
yes, but now you're talking about friction melting, but you're talking about, when you talk about melting, we're looking at like hundreds of nanometers.
Tiny amount of friction.
Yeah. Yeah,
but and that gives you the squirt over
that's
squirt.
Why
yes,
it,
yes,
why
yes, yeah, 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 yeah. That's what gives it. Yes, yeah. It is melting on the 100 nanometer type of level. And so again, it doesn't behave anything differently than any other slider on ice. Okay, so I looked. Well, there is a left-right asymmetry because the velocity of the rock is turning is different on the left and the right side. So this would be the resulting frictional force on the left and right side, taking that into account. The left side's going slower, there's more friction. So we know that. And this dependence on velocity, that's what we should expect. However, if you look left and right, the net force, zero. It's symmetric. Yes, it's more on the left side, but if you look up here, going this way, they're equal. The net force acting on the rock, zero. So left-right asymmetry by itself won't lead to the deflection. I proposed at that time, because I didn't notice with rocks, especially towards the end, how they would seem at the slow side would seem to catch or almost adhere to the ice and then it's twist. So I said maybe it's a stick slip. Something's happening like this. Means I had to pay. I wanted to do this paper and I thought, oh, man, I to do a paper, you just say, well, nothing works. So I wanted some proposal, some idea, so I put forth this. But the problem is, with that, if it's left, right, even with that, it should depend on the angular velocity. The more it's spinning, the bigger the difference between the velocities, the bigger the difference between the friction. And so that effect, the curly rock should curl more, the more I spin it.
But the friction force at the sides is entirely in the direction of motion. It cannot cause a deflection to the side.
The components, it's symmetrical, there's components in the horizontal, but right now they cancel each other, right?
Yeah. But the ones on the fast
but if you look here, look at this side, this is going slower, higher friction than this side. If there was any type of stick slip, it's possible. But again, even though I just proposed that, I would still, I could not come up with any reasonable model where it would not depend on the angular velocity. This wasn't possible. Some guys took my idea and added a countering effect, but it was just putting equations together so we can get it. But it just does not work. So can't be front back, can't be left right. Then I guess 2013, new idea came out. We looked at the rough surface of the running band being important. And I didn't mention it, actually, in my paper, I did mention that it was rougher. I didn't do anything with it, though. I thought it was rougher just to increase the frictional heating. I thought maybe it had something to do with that. Now, I should say, the ice isn't just flat ice. They pebble it. They sprinkle water. So it got little, and we're talking about millimeter. And so the rock actually rides on those bumps. I did throw rocks where I said don't pebble it to see that does that have any impact. The friction is way larger when it's not pebbled. Still curled though. I was able to get it down the ice. Same amount. So what these guys had is that the running band is scratching the ice, scratching the top of the pebbles. When I first saw this, could that do anything? They had pictures, so it did definitely scratch the top of the pebbles. They had pictures before and after. And their idea was that the band, when it's coming back around, is crossing these scratches. And it's caused, that's what's causing the deflection. It did seem a bit out there when I first saw this. How could that be? No, but they did actually work out a model, unfortunately. They did actually do a model for this in terms of working out specifically what the force would be to show its independent angular velocity. And they even said in their paper that when you actually work it out, when you work it through it, you don't get any left-right deflection. It cancels out the symmetry. But they did experiments. They scratched the ice. So they scratched the ice at 45 and had rocks unpolished and polished and just pushed them down with not rotating them. The polished one didn't, nothing happened, just went straight. The one with the rough band deflected. So even though they themselves didn't give a model and they indicated the problems with what they have, they're the first ones to actually have a demonstration of deflecting a curling rock. So there are still issues there. And I wish they had not scratched the ice so heavily. I saw a little video of them. It's like that's really scratched ice. I wish they had just taken a curling rock itself and done this. So scratched ice with a curling rock. So it's that level to see if it deflects. So now why does a curling rock curl?
Nobody knows.
No, but the model that's used to give that velocity dependence has half surface melting. So we know it's that. I mean, I know it's that because of it matches the model dead on with other sliders, and it works beautifully for that.
But that's sliding.
Sliding, but no rotation.
So is there
a? But the velocity part of the rotation compared to the slide is only you're rotating it very little. So you're talking maybe a 5-10% difference in the velocity.
But is it known that the friction force is collinear in the opposite direction with the sliding direction?
Pardon me?
Yes. Known if I pull, is there an effect of the angle of attack of each element?
That's the experiment that nobody's done.
Yeah. Now they did it with the scratches, right?
Yeah.
They looked at the angle of attack of the following band scratching.
Yeah.
Now, they never presented a model, and in their paper, though I didn't see why they didn't think it, why they thought it was symmetrical, and I just couldn't follow. But to me, what they said, okay, made sense, and the fact that they got it to deflect with the scratching, and now curlers nowadays are now using this. It's called directional sweeping. Now they go at 45.
Right.
right? So the fact that curlers are using this indicates, but yet again, there was no model, there was no mathematical model provided, just the idea of this. All right, now. I can give you, these I can give you answers to. The design of a driver club head. I gave up curling. Took up golf. Very frustrating. Very frustrating. But one thing that kept me going was the physics of golf. Holy smokes. I don't think there's any sport that even comes close to the physics that's in golf. Even the words they use when you buy clubs, moment of inertia, they use these words. Center of gravity. They, now they have clubs where you can adjust the center of gravity. I'll pass this around just to those that don't golf. What I want you to look at, this is the driver club head. The angle and the curvature of the face. So the first thing I looked at was the loft. I found papers, I said, why is, because in class, you say a 45 degree angle, you launch things maximum distance. Now, in class, we talk about that's only in those special cases. If I'm talking of doing someone doing a long jump, they're not jumping at 45 degrees.
The absence of air resistance.
Nothing to do with air resistance. This is that I can't jump at 45 degrees with the same speed I can jump at a lower angle. So you can work that out, 25, 30 degrees for a long jumper, optimal. I know if you throw a shot put, you don't want to launch it at 45 degrees. Because now the height's different. It's not the same. So I found papers, but all of them did approximations and this and that, and the best one got down to say it's 25 degrees. But it's not, it's 10 degrees. And the manufacturers of clubs know what they're doing. And I know a lot of you are mathematicians and way better at me than math, but 25 is not equal to 10. So I said, okay, well, let's work this out. I just looked at the phases of the act. You hit the golf ball, the impact, the flight of the golf ball, and the run of the golf ball. The run of the golf ball means ball hits, bounces, and rolls. Impact, club head, and golf ball, fairly straightforward. Conservation of angular momentum, linear momentum, coefficient restitution. You have to get that. It does depend on the impact speed. The ball is in a pure state of rolling. When you look at high-speed videos of clubs hitting a golf ball, the golf ball compresses a fair bit against the club face. And almost in every case, it comes out in a near state of rolling, except for sometimes the wedge. It's a bit complicated in that the golf ball is not really rigid. So it kind of twists. But pretty well you can treat it as coming out rolling. And from that, sit straight forward to get your equations for how the launch speed, launch angle, and backspin of the golf ball depend on the club face loft. And so I were able to work those out. Obviously, that's the initial velocity of the ball. And obviously, as the loft is increased, that's going to decrease. The bigger the loft, the lower the initial velocity. Angle, launch angle, of course, depends on that. That's going to go up as I increase the loft. And this one's a big one, backspin. A lot of backspin given to the golf ball. And I'm sure you're all familiar with the Magnussen effect, but if you're not, look, you got a rotating ball moving through the air. If you ever want to demonstrate that to the styrofoam ball, you want to throw it with lots of backspin, and you can see it just like a golf ball. Kind of see it lift up. If you threw it with no spin, you couldn't reach the wall. It's a huge effect. The Magnussen effect comes in, you know, all ball sports. Where you have a round ball like that. It was modeled. It's kind of a non-natural way of modeling the Magnus effect when you look at it. I'd probably do it in terms of magnitude and angle of deflection. But typically, wind tunnel tests gather data. So you talk about drag and lift coefficients. This is one thing that was hard to get, bounce length. Need the coefficient restitution. I couldn't really find any good data. People would do an experiment that only have it for one velocity. So I gathered this data, very Mickey Mouse. I need to get high enough speeds that match the landing speed of a golf ball. So I had a student throw a ball up. We timed its flight and measured its bounce height.
This is normal.
This is just normal. When you get the coefficient restitution, that's for normal impact. Okay.
And on what surface? On grass?
This is grass, yeah. I recently got data from the USGA, but again, it's very limited. But they're only interested in drives. So it's limited data. But I think it was close to what I got doing my. They had robots hitting. I just threw my ball up in the air. Results. So I looked at how carry and drive. So there's both the carry, and if you're interested in the total drive distance, depending on what the club head speed was. 55 meters per second would be talking pro. 45 meters per second would be your average golfer. And of course, 35 meters per second, it's still okay. I learned golfing, it's better to hit it 150 yards or 200 yards straight than 250 yards into the woods.
I'm sorry, you dumb. Carry and drive mean what?
carry means the distance from where you hit to where the ball lands.
Okay.
Drive total distance is the total, because then it bounces and rolls.
Oh, okay, sorry.
So drive distance is the total distance. So for 45 meters per second, the average, you see, first of all, it's quite broad, so it's not that sensitive to the loft. A degree or two isn't going to make much difference. And you get around, for here, let's say you get around 13 degrees, which of course isn't 10. There's something called dynamic loft, so it wasn't 10. The shaft bends. So when you do the swing, in fact, a lot of research has gone into how the shaft moves, and the data I found is typically adds 2 to 3 degrees to the loft. So the loft may be 10 degrees on the club face, but the actual loft when it hit the ball is more like 12, 13 degrees. So I got my number. And of course, the greater the club head speed, the lower the optimal loft. So a professional should use a loft less than 10 degrees, 8 degrees. If you're a beginner golfer, just put the driver away. It's not doing anything for you. You use a club with a higher loft, 3 wood, or 5 wood, because that. Unless you're hitting the ball 250 yards, which you're probably not, the driver is really useless to you. You're not gaining anything by using a driver versus using like a 3-wood. So that for me, it helped. I stopped using my driver. There was no point. And it was true. I got that from a different place. As you'd expect, it depends on club head speed. Most people say, after all, we've done this physics of golf, what advice would you give to a golfer? 5 minutes? Holy smokes. I've gone that slow? Holy smokes. This interesting stuff is why the face is curved. Because if you look at the club face, it's bizarre. If you pass me that club face, shoot. Because you wouldn't think it'd be curved like this. Because if I swung and hit it here, I would think the ball would go there. Right, if we hit the toll, it goes there. These are the backspin. No, sorry, the side spin. As I showed, the side spin given to the ball. It's called the gear effect. So the golf ball is given a spin such that if you hit it on that side, it goes that way. So they curve it to shoot it out that way more. So because the spin is going to go make it come back. It's quite strange, because when I first was started golfing, it didn't make any sense why you'd curve the face that way. Hockey sticks are curved the other way specifically, so you know, kind of have like a pocket. So when you hit the puck, so you're trying to match, you angle it to match, so the side spin that you give the ball is such that you do that. It's more complicated analysis. It's 3D. The both things are rotating. Moment of inertia has come into it, but it's nothing really that difficult. Looks equations look cool because there's long, messy equations, but it's quite simple. And so I modeled that to find out what the club face curvature should be. And it matched pretty well with what you find. And it shows you when it's flat, see what go off, this is hitting on this side here, goes off that way. So you curve it like this to shoot them off this way. So they curve back. And so you get the, depending again on the, typically they make it for the average golfer of the club. So they design the curvature. So for the average golfer hitting a centimeter or two off center, they'll line it up to the center. Maybe I'm gonna skip some of this stuff. My biggest thing was putting. I looked at putting. I looked at fairly straightforward, a ball rolling on a slanted surface. The only thing, the friction, you had to get the coefficient, rolling friction. Depending on, see, the ball doesn't really roll that nice, because you hit it with the putter, it actually bounces, very low bounces, before it actually kicks into rolling. Capture of the golf ball by the hole. How off can you be off the hole?
Non-capture.
I worked out what angles, what range of angles, and what range of velocities could you have and still get it, make the good putt. I was able to get some data. This is these two lines are actually professional golfers' probabilities of making certain putts, and based just on my model, these are the data I got. Now, to be fair, I picked a point to say the probability to match at a certain point, let's say at 10 feet. And I did not expect this. In fact, it's not really a good thing, because I wouldn't expect this. I wouldn't expect it, because I did mine for flat surfaces, and this professional data, this data would be collected for golfers on non-flat surfaces, real putts. So one would not expect golfers to be the same whether it's flat or not. So even though it looks really good, I was a little.
But you would if they're professional, right? That's
yeah, the but the variance means the variance that means the variance in their shots is greater than their variance in the reading of the putt. So they're precise with reading of the putt. So they know I'm going to go 1 foot to the right. They're more precise with that than the actual golf shot. This got me in a bit of trouble, because when I worked out, I also found that a downhill putt is easier to make than an uphill putt. When I got this paper, got a lot of publicity, so a lot of TV and radio interviews, and they always would bring this up. This is the big sticking point. Because I golf too, and I do not want a downhill putt. Now, does it work on a real green? So I was contracted with a project to say for television to show live before the golfer hits the ball. So this is my first, it was ABC and then Golf Channel for a couple of years. So this is the aim point, worked that out, and worked out, the greens were surveyed in to get the path that the ball would take on a real green. And then this is all done live, so this is before the guy would even do the putt. See if this catches. So a video clip. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't realize I spent too much time on curling. Come on. This is supposed to, there we go. I guess I stopped it here. Just to show you, it actually in action. This is from Aimpoint. That was a company I worked for, that I did the project for. No, that's not right. Come on, worked before. Okay, I'm doing something stupid. Oh, shoot. Oh, rats. I was showing you some real live action of golfers putting, following the line. Maybe I can talk if somehow I messed up.
Why don't we, since we're a little over time, we can take questions and also...
Well, let's tell you something cool about that. So we did this for the golf, for the television, and worked really well. And in North America, in the States, they have television awards, so Emmys. So we actually won the Emmy for this. So when students ask me, I say, well, you know, yes, if you study physics, you can win an Emmy. We don't know if it was for technical achievement.
So how good is it?
Why would it?
Well,
I was modeling it down to the physics. I was talking about wind at that level. Yeah. For in Hawaii, they got a fair bit of, before it worked, we tried it.
Is your company Aimpoint?
No, it's not my company. That's the company that hired me to do the physics.
Physics for money, huh?
Yes. But it was very cool. And I was going to talk about baseball, but I was hired to see if they could do the same thing for baseball on TV.
Play it on the screen like that.
Yeah, it works fine. There it goes.
What about this thing?
Oh, that looks good.
Yeah.
So sometimes when you watch, you can actually see, you can tell right away the golfer's going to miss or make the putt. So this is a different version.
That's your calculation?
Yeah, that's my calculation, where you should be aiming. And the line shows the path of the puck if he does that.
There's up and down in the survey.
Oh, yeah, the
golf. That before?
Yeah, we have to survey it in.
You have to survey it. Topographic data.
Yeah, topographic data. And then I can calculate where they should aim and how the ball is going to travel. Yeah, there was one really good putt, was the best one, because that guy almost went at 45 degrees and it kind of come back down.
It's not unique, no? Is there only one solution?
I put in what optimal distance beyond the hole do you want the ball to stop at? Uh-huh. And typically, it actually varies with the level of the player. So typically, it's like around a foot past the hole is your stopping distance. So once you sit that in, I find the solution.
But then they can train on your trajectory.
They do now. The company set up, it's nothing to do with me, with professionals. Oh yeah, no. They with professionals. They do training with professionals. You can tell right away the guy's gonna miss the putt.
Yeah.
So this is all live. So you're watching it, right? So they can tell right away. And the guys
can't see the green line on the field.
Yeah, no, they do. Oh, the guy golfers can't.
Yeah. Right.
They wanted to. They were very interested to see if this is possible for training.
But the player doesn't see.
Ooh. Oh, that's a good one.
I think. It's not me. It's not me. It's their promo clip.
Yay.
See, it's a little bit short. Just a bit short.
Hey, this is like the lines in football, right?
There's a company. The company did the lines of football. Do the lines here. The same company. It's the same company.
So the number of fitting parameters you're using to make this calculation for, say, Justin Leonard is going to make this, how many? How impressive?
How deep? Well, it depends, right? Because they, like I said, wind at that height, you'd think be hardly nothing, but in Hawaii,
yeah,
it does have some impact, right? And even the type of grass, because the grass has a grain.
Right. But you're not modeling that stuff, right? You are. You go out and make drag measurements on.
Not me. They tell me, yeah. So I tell you how the parameters. You tell me the orientation. Tell me the orientation of the grain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Working now with a project. I'm actually just starting Monday with the USGA.
Huh.
And we're going to look at, they want to do a simulation of a full golf game. So I'm supposed to model a ball coming in on the turf at an angle with side spin and back spin, kicking off into the rough, and how does it move. They want to actually simulate so they can actually tell you in a tournament what the scores are going to be for that particular golf course.
Yeah. One last question. I think we're running a little
sorry. Long. Sorry about that.
One last question.
Fascinating. Went too slow there.
Other questions?
No. Another big market for this is video game makers. They love to make super realistic games.
Yes.
And so...
But I did work, really I did one off. With one project I did with where they had the club and you swing and then you have your computer screen.
But there was a company.
But they used my data for testing. The actual equations they actually used were their own. They just wanted to make sure that their end result was realistic. They didn't really care about having this drag and lift coefficients and all that stuff in there, right? So they were just using my stuff to get it so it looked good.
Okay, so why don't we
thank you.
Room it again.